I have one of the biggest Google ads agencies that's ever been built, and I am seeing an unbelievable, unprecedented shift away from paid advertising. We're going to see the age of the influencer. You should never pay for an eyeball one time. What you should do is build a community. I think community building is the future of digital marketing. It's the reason you're doing this podcast. It's the reason I do mine. You know what the average time on site at YouTube is? Average time on site, give a guess.
I'm going 30 minutes.
Average time on site across the internet is sub 60 seconds. Oh, wow. Average on for all websites. Yeah. Average time on YouTube, 20 minutes.
Wow.
I think AI is going to change the world. I've never been more optimistic about anything in my entire life. It doesn't solve the competitive marketplace because everybody's got it.
So, you know, what really kickstarted your success, you know, at Solo 8, and how did, you know, what was something that you found that, you know, everybody in everybody's business has, you know, you're going along and once you kind of get that spark or that big first win, or, you know, what do you feel like was a catalyst that, you know, that changed the trajectory of your business that really got you going, and really off to the races of building what you've built?
Niching down. We didn't really start to gain traction. Well, I was making money. And that was actually the interesting thing is I had an amount of money that I wanted to make. And I'm like, as soon as I make this amount of money, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had Solutions 8 was called Solutions 8 because we have 8 core service offerings at the time. So we were doing, like, you know, web development and social media and content and paid and organic and video. And I would walk your dog if you let me, like, anything you'd really want to pay me money for. And the value prop there was like, well, your entire marketing agency or marketing department, you know, in one house or whatever, under one roof. And interestingly, it actually kind of worked. Like, I had 13 or 14 employees in this office space. We had a green screen studio, and we were just, you know, we had a dozen or so clients that were paying us 4, 5, 6, 7 grand a month, depending on the client, to do all of it. And it was a nightmare. And I'm actually, like, making money at this point, and I've hit this number that was in my head, and I've never been more miserable in my entire life. And I hated every minute of it. And the thing about being everything to everybody is, no matter what goes wrong, it's your fault. So I remember this distinctly. I'd have a client call me up and be like, you know, I don't like that this review is showing up on Google. And somebody had written something on, like, Riff Off Report or whatever. And because I was responsible for his organic, that became my problem.
Yeah.
You know, and we had one of our clients was a home furnishings company, a really big home furnishings company. They did, you know, $100 million a year or something in gross revenue. And somebody got mad at them because they were supposed to do the furnishings on a new build. And so they uploaded a picture to their Google My Business profile of a toilet with a turd in it. And so the very first thing that happened when you Google this company's brand, they're carpet bombing the ecosystem with radio, television, newspaper. The very first thing that happens is you see this toilet with, you know, fecal matter floating. Oh. And nobody knew how to get access to the GMB profile. And if you've ever had a GMB profile that you couldn't get access to, you know, it's impossible. And so, like, now the CEO of this $100 million company is breathing down my neck to go remove this damn thing. And they're my biggest client at the time. And it was just like, I'm like, this can't be what business is. This is not work. I don't know how to do most of what I'm selling. I have to figure it out after the fact, you know? And then the people that are working for me too are just like running around like frantic chickens with their head cut off. And I ended up bringing on a business partner. I thought I was going to hire him as a CEO. I was like, all right, I'm making the money I want to make. Now all I need to do is take somebody who's good at running a business. And then I'm going to go be a mogul. I was doing some real estate stuff then. And I thought I could, like, zoom out of the business. So there was a young man that he actually used to be a client, interestingly, and his business got taken down by a bad investor. And so he's sort of floating around, figuring out what he wanted to do. And I stalked him for like 90 days. I was like, hey, man, I've got a pretty unique opportunity over here. And he came in, and instead of running the business, he ended up kind of like just being my right hand. And he was the one that spotted Google Ads first. So we've got all these clients, and everybody's mad at me, and they're all yelling at me, and they're all on fire. But we're making pretty good money. And he goes, over time, he's like, man, everybody that's successful is successful at Google Ads first. And I'm an idiot. So I was like, I don't want to be a Google Ads agency. There's no money in it. And at the time, that was the only service we weren't offering in-house. I was outsourcing it to another agency. But things started to go into a direction where we started to use Google to see which clients were going to be viable long-term. The thing I love about Google is everybody's like, oh, I'm going to go test out Google Ads. No, you're not. Google's going to test you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to suit you up, put you in the Coliseum with your competitors. And if you come out alive, I know that you have something people want to buy. I know you know how to talk to your customer. I know you're pricing yourself in a way that's actually accessible to the market. So Google's an organic ecosystem. So we started to use Google just to, like, as a litmus test for clients. And we got so good at selling that that we started peeling off other services, like just saying no to them. That was the hardest thing I ever had to do, because I could do a web build. You could make 50 to 100 grand on a website at the time. This was back in the day when websites were hard. Mm-hmm. And so to say no to that kind of money was, it felt almost naive. But I realized when we got traction with Google, I was like, man, we're actually building something that could go. So we just started saying no to everything. We said no to doing creative. As a Google Ads agency, we actually didn't do the creative, which is unusual for most traffic agencies. But man, the more I niched down and the more focused I got, like the more effective we got, the better our service, the better the customer communication, the better the expectation management, the better the sales, the easier the targeting, the easier the marketing. I knew who to communicate with. I knew what to say. And we were just, it was just off like a shot as soon as we made that decision.
That's awesome. And I think a lot of brands can, you know, can use that advice with, you know, they try to diversify too much. They try to offer too much. When they really need, they need to focus on what's working, what they're really good at, and one single thing that they can, you know, really drive their business forward. So,
yeah. Were you specific to any industry as part of that? Did you start saying no to certain industries because you knew how well what you did for different categories of business, or did you do a bunch of different things?
Yeah, that got really fun. So we actually spun off businesses. It became an incubator. We got so good at real estate investment that we spun off a whole other agency called GeoFlip. We had the number one real estate investment campaign on the planet. I can prove that with data. Homevestors, who's the We Buy Ugly Houses guys, just as one example, we were in every major geography in the United States almost. But like in Phoenix, Homevestors was paying $550 per lead. We were getting our leads for $70.
Nice.
So we were like, and this is, these deals are worth, you know, if you get a house that you can flip in the right context, that could be a couple hundred grand. And I'm paying a fraction of what other people are paying. And so Solutions 8 let me see the industries that really worked well. And we spun off the real estate agency I ended up selling. We spun off a Montessori agency. And then there are some that we tried to spin off. Like we did really well in, who are the guys that do... stonemasons. So like we had this father-son team. Hey, speaking of father-sons, great guys, loved working with them. And they were stonemasons, and they'd spend $2,000 in Google and they'd get a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of work.
Wow.
So you, and we were like, saw the business. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah,
you saw the businesses
like,
that you could, had opportunity in and built them and created those because you knew that you could use the Google ads to just take them to the moon.
That's exactly right. It became a metal detector. Now, they were interesting because we'd get them real busy and they'd be like, all right, turn it off. And we'd be like, well, don't you want to hire or
yeah,
grow?
We're going to grow this thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they're like, nope, we're good for at least 6 months. You're like,
yeah, dude, that's exactly what would happen. I'd be like, dude. So we thought it was just them. We're like, all right, they're not, you know, they're not motivated to grow. They have what they want. That's great. I ended up joining the Stonemason Contracting Association.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. We tried to spin up an agency just for stonemasons. And it was a ubiquitous truth. And honestly, I think there was actually some wisdom there. I think some of them had tried to grow and realized this is such a master craft.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be the technician, I can be happy doing me. But the minute I try to run a crew, everything falls apart. And so we couldn't get anybody to lift themselves into scale. So I couldn't build the clients. And then there are industries, to answer your question the other way, there are industries I wouldn't touch. Like I'll never run Google Ads for residential realty ever. Period, full stop, because every idiot that ever gets a real estate license goes straight to Google and says, here's my card, send me leads. General dentistry, this is an actual statistic I use in my keynote. I looked it up. I'm within walking distance, and I don't walk much, so I'm within my opinion of walking distance of 36 dentists.
Wow. That's crazy.
Just where I live. Now, every dentist offers free care and cleaning your very first time, right? Which means I could go to the dentist. You have to go to the dentist every 6 months. I go to the dentist for 18 years and never pay for a dentist. So there's all these industries where it's like a snake eating its own tail, but that was the coolest part about Google. And that was why we were so good. It's not that I was like better at Google than other people. It's because I managed the expectation, hey, 50% of all Google campaigns fail in the first 90 days. We're going to see whether or not your business can survive in this organic ecosystem. And if it doesn't, we're going to tell you why.
Nice.
And people love, they're like, oh my God, somebody who's telling me the truth. That's great. Thank you. And
they're not just blowing smoke.
Going, yeah. Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, they're not just blowing smoke. I mean, a lot of times those agencies promise the world for you to shoot them straight is very, I'm sure, was nice.
The average agency retention in the paid media space is 4 months. We were at 16 when we sold.
Wow.
So agencies are just churning and burning. Yep. You know, they're just revolving doors. And that's why we were able to grow, because we'd get a client, we'd actually keep them. And then, you know, people started to love us. And a lot of it was just picking the right horse. You know, we'd have somebody come in and I'd say, this will never work. Here are the reasons why. But then that person would send me two others being like, those are the dudes.
Wow. That's awesome.
You know, talking about Google specific campaigns that won for you, and then what you would say today for like a business out there looking into these things, which ones do you think Google is just all about Google on them? So Performance Max campaigns, we were talking about this yesterday, and you know, you have those optimization scores. Does that actually mean anything? You know, obviously Google's in that world of like making money. What's your thoughts on knowing what campaigns work and using their criteria for what they say you should run? Like, what is some of your philosophy on how to run those ads based off that?
My philosophy now, I'm an investor, a wannabe. What I really do is I lose money, fellas. But like, this is why you don't give dumb people money. I sold my business and I'm like, I'm going to be an investor. But as a quote unquote investor, one of my criteria now is I will not buy or invest in a business that's dependent on paid traffic.
Nice.
And I'll tell you this now, do not make paid traffic. It can be a avenue of acquisition. But, you know, it used to be 10 years ago, you know, things were pennies a click. And so you could make it rain leads. And then it got into a position where it was like, all right, you need to be sophisticated, but you can at least be profitable on the front end. And then it got to where it was like, all right, you're not going to be profitable on the front end, but you're going to self-liquidate. So you're not spending any money, but you now you have the client. And then it got to a point where it's like, well, you're not going to self-liquidate on the front end offer, but you're going to be able to ascend them. We're now in a position to where you're not self-liquidating even on the ascension. Everybody's playing an LTV game. So this is the level of sophistication in the paid ad space has gotten so insanely, like the timeline has been pushed so insanely far.
Yeah.
You have companies like Salesforce that are banking on a 25-year lifetime value. How do you compete with that? You don't. And it's happening, especially in the commodity space. I have a client that sells salsa and they're phenomenal. They're a phenomenal brand. Great, great, great value proposition. Great fulfillment, great retention. And I forgot what the numbers were, but it was like, somebody has to buy 18 months worth of salsa from him for him to cover his CAC in paid media. Mm. And I'm seeing it in every industry. And Google is the worst. They're the word. They're the Leviathan. Imagine an auctioneer. Okay. This is the way Google's set up. Imagine an auctioneer who is the one profiting from the auction. So they're not an independent arbiter.
Yep.
They can see everybody who's bidding on the auction, exactly what those people are willing to bid. And here's the best part. How much money those people make off of what they're bidding on.
Yeah.
Wow.
And now we're going to trust this fool to be like, I think that these clicks should be this. The auction isn't based off of, it used to be the Vickrey auction model, which was it was developed in the 1800s. And it means that the highest bidder wins the bid, but pays the second highest bidder's price. Google has since changed it. This is actually, and I think this is so that they can avoid an antitrust suit. This is published. This isn't conspiracy theory. Okay. Google says we base the price of the click on what we believe the value to be.
Wow.
So that's why personal injury, it's $1,000 a click in a personal injury.
Wow.
It's not because the competition has gotten there. It's because Google knows that's what you're willing to pay. And Google's, if in any organic ecosystem, you'd have a Pareto distribution. You'd have 80% of the real value going to 20% of your advertisers. The problem with that, though, is Google's inventory is you. So Google doesn't want a Pareto distribution because it nullifies the majority of its inventory. What Google wants to do is maximize the value of its own inventory. And so it's sprinkling its traffic across all of its advertisers in a way that you're just satiated enough to keep spending. So it's pernicious. And if you think Google's bad, Meta's worse. Meta's run by a petulant child thief. I can prove definitively hundreds of times that they lie about their conversion data. They say, and they call it modeling.
Yeah.
They're like, we think we sold 12 things today. And there's no, and that's, and then you put them both together and it's like you have abusive parents, you know, because you've sold 10 things today. Okay. Let's say you actually sold 10 belts and Meta goes, we sold 8 of them. And Google's like, we sold 8 of them. And in a way they're both not lying because they interacted in some fashion from a remarketing perspective or display based, but it takes 500 touches to get anybody to do anything. So what I would tell everybody, and I'm, you know, a part of the evil empire in a lot of ways, because I made all my money inside of Google, but I got to see like, and it got worse. Performance Max is a freaking lie. Performance Max sells your customers back to you. It's all remarketing traffic, brand traffic, competitor traffic. There's no customer acquisition. Turn to do this. If you think Google's like, oh, you're getting a 700% ROAS in Performance Max. Good job. Keep going. Turn it off. And then don't watch Google. Watch your bank account. You're not going to lose any money. All Google's doing is selling you your customers to you and saying 700% ROAS. It's an open air conspiracy. And what's sad too is we were the Performance Max agency. We were the ones that put everybody on Performance Max. When Performance Max was brand new, it was amazing, but it's because it was blue ocean. Now with Performance Max, you give Google your credit card and your domain name and you're like, go, you make the decisions. And when everybody opts into an ecosystem like that, riddle me this, Batman, and I'm talking to Google, how on earth could an AI-driven marketing mechanism be built in any other way than to maximize the value of their inventory? Here's every advertiser they have with what that advertiser is willing to pay and how much inventory they have. How could you build it otherwise? How could you go to an engineer and say, hey, guys, we're going to have to make this laissez-faire fair, right? Like, it's not possible. It's not possible. So we're all praying.
It's not good business for them. So.
Yeah. Google admitted the other day that they boosted CPCs arbitrarily for freaking no reason. And I've been to the Google. They flew me to London to do a talk. I'm in a couple of their training videos and they're like, people trust you. So we're, and I was like, you realize that I'm not going to like beat the Google drum. And they're like, yeah, they had me up there one time. They never had me back. So man, dude, I'm not answering your question the right way, Josh. I know they're supposed to be. Here's what I will say is go top of funnel. When you're not going to pay for traffic, if you're going for conversion traffic, direct response, you're in the muck and the mire of everybody fighting tooth and nail for it. If you go top of funnel and do value provision, which is really YouTube, right? It's like YouTube display inside of Meta. It's awareness building. And you're on building a brand. So that's what you want to do. You want to do brand building media buys because the traffic is still relatively inexpensive and you're not putting them in a position to optimize you into a squeeze. Here's the other thing that I'm going to say. It's absolutely insane for a data-driven marketer. Don't run conversion ads. Don't run ads because you think, oh, I need the machine learning mechanism to optimize my campaign for me and towards a conversion goal, which it will do. But now you're telling Google what you want. And if you tell Google what you want, Google knows what it's worth. So if you get real smart, and that's why you have to niche down. I own an agency for Montessori schools. You put me in front of a Montessori school, I know for a fact what they're worth to me. I'll pay anything to be in front of a Montessori school, but there's only 4,500 accredited Montessori schools in the United States. So niche down, and then you get good at your numbers, and then your message has to be good enough to capture those people. So if you put a good message in front of a good prospect and they're like, I like these guys, and they engage in some way, you take them out of the paid ad ecosystem and you do things like a podcast or a lead magnet or a YouTube channel or something that kind of captures them. And then now you get to nurture them on your own terms without having to pay for every single time they see you.
That's awesome. What do you think the end game is with that? You know, like, do you think AI will change any of this? Like, what does the future of that digital ad look like? You know, do you think are they overstepping their bounds or other social platforms? What is the future of ads, man? Like, we're in a weird place with AI and all this stuff. Like, what's your take on it?
Yeah, there has to be some level of collapse. The pendulum has swung too far in terms of the cost of the traffic. It's no longer tenable, and we're seeing that now. I've lost more clients in the last 90 days than I've lost in the last 2 years, and I get love notes on the way out. It's like, you guys are amazing. You know, we can't afford it. We're closing shop. We're you know, there's no inventory. We're taking it in house, whatever. So there's definitely something. I keep hearing no recession. I'm not seeing that at all. And I have $100 million in ad spend under management. So I'm not telling you, this is my anecdotal opinion. I'm telling you, I have one of the biggest Google ads agencies that's ever been built. And I am seeing an unbelievable, unprecedented shift away from paid advertising.
Wow.
And the interesting thing, and we saw this is an interesting example. When I was in the real estate space, all real estate marketers used direct mail first. And then we were the ones that showed them Google. And if you saw the number of Google ads agency before and after I introduced GeoFlip, like, we created 150 competitors. That's why I sold. And then the market turned. But what was interesting is when all the real estate investors went to Google or went to paid media, they all left direct mail at the same time. Mm. And so I started talking to some of my buddies in REI and they're like, dude, we just started using direct mail again. And it is crushing life.
Yeah.
So I think that you're going to see a collapse in the paid ad ecosystem, but because it is in some ways based off of supply and demand, it's not an auction. They're not allowed to say it anymore. And I think there should be an antitrust suit against those jackasses. But when people shift away, they're going to shift away in mass. And then there's the opportunity. And so it's just the classic cliche, you know, when people are fearful, be greedy and vice versa. I think there's a paid media collapse. The other thing that I think is going to happen is we're going to see the age of the influencer. Because you should never pay for an eyeball one time. what you should do is build a community. I think community building is the future of digital marketing. It's the reason you're doing this podcast. It's the reason I do mine. And the thing about community building is the acquisition on community building is about as expensive as the acquisition on anything else. But for a community, you actually have a well you go to. And a community is nice well because you've given first. You give first, give last, give more. And so community building, I think, is the future of digital marketing. But not all brands are going to be able to do adequate community building. So what's the alternative? You go to the influencer who's already built the community. Now, that relationship can't be, it's not an affiliate. It's not, here's my thing, Dance Monkey. It's the influencer protecting the audience and saying, I'm only going to represent something that I know is aligned with my audience that I believe in. And what's nice about that is that lifts you out of paid too. And it creates this kind of this symbiotic relationship between the person that can build the community and the person that can monetize the community. Because what we're seeing in the influencer space is these people have no idea how to properly monetize their community.
Yep.
No idea. And then you have the businesses that have no idea how to get in front of those people. So their match is made in heaven. And I don't think that those matches are going to be orchestrated. I don't think the influencer networks that are popping up are going to be the ones that help. I actually think that those relationships need to be organically constructed, kind of the way that we're doing this now. You know, it's a little bit more feet on the street. But I think paid media is going to see a major shift. And then to the point that you made about AI, AI is going to work. The problem with AI is it's like a nuke. A nuke is the greatest thing you've ever had if you're the only country that has it.
Yeah.
But the minute all the countries have it, now it's like, all right, not only can nobody use this, but we have to talk about how we're going to not use murder this. each other, yeah. Right? Like, so it's just one of those things to where the commoditization of the AI offering is going to be instant by virtue of the way that AI is structured. So I don't think AI is going to be this life-changing technology in the competitive ecosystem as it relates to paid ads. I think AI is going to change the world. I've never been more optimistic about anything in my entire life. I think it's unbelievable. So I'm very, very, very bullish on AI, generally speaking. I think it cures famine and world hunger and climate issues. Like, I think it's unbelievable. But it doesn't solve the competitive marketplace because everybody's got it.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you. What do you see people doing still that they should stop?
Man, that's the best question I've ever had, Matt. They need to not trust the numbers that are being given them by any single source. Google's wrong. Meta's wrong. But Shopify's wrong. Your CRM's wrong. The only thing that's right is your bank account. And so instead of looking, never, ever, I won't take a client that says the words ROAS or TCPA to me. I do not care. I want a $10 cost per lead. I can get you a 60 cent cost per lead, but they're all going to be in Uganda, you imbecile.
Yeah.
No, you don't. You actually don't want a $10 cost per lead. What you want is a customer. But because we've siloed the interests, everybody, they say it the wrong way. And so make sure you're measuring the right thing, which is revenue, right? So then you're looking at like media efficiency ratio. That becomes a key performance indicator.
Yes.
Or ROI, that becomes a key performance indicator.
Yep. The MER. But, you know, big proponent of that. And that's what I've focused our business on, because you can't trust all of those things. But what you can trust is what you've spent overall on marketing and what you make in revenue. And it's
cash
like, you know
out.
What I mean? And so, if you know what that balance is and what that, you know, that line is, then, you know, you can push it to that. And then, you know, if you're not making that, you're not making money. So.
Well, dude, you just said it too. If you're not making that, you're not making money. I can't tell you how many. This happens all the time. It's devastating when I think about how sad this is. I will have people come to us as leads, as prospects, and they do not understand. They're like, we're making 1400% ROAS in Google, but I'm losing money. And they're just deer in headlights, confused, because, and I'm not trying to be mean or dismissive. It's because they trust the Google numbers so much. And I have to explain to them, this is a $1 trillion lie machine that you're pumping money into. And so, you know, to go back to the question, you can't trust any single number. You have to look at the mix. That's really important. Stop spending at the bottom of the funnel. And I'm the worst at this. I'm the absolute worst. So there's just epic amounts of hypocrisy I'm soaking in right now. Because all we ever did was bottom of the funnel marketing, but it doesn't work anymore. Go top of funnel, go brand building.
Would you say that same recommendation for e-commerce brands? Because obviously a lot of e-commerce companies will see this.
E-com is always going to have a harder time at the top of the funnel because the value provision is a little bit different. I'll tell you, when an e-com brand can really crack the code on that though, so like the salsa guys, they teach barbecue. And dear God, was that a brilliant freaking pivot, because their community now is about, you know, here's the barbecue. Oh, hey, by the way, if you need the salsa, we've got the salsa for you. But they build a community, and it's almost pre-awareness, right? Because it's like awareness, consideration, intent, whatever, purchase. If you can go pre-awareness with it, and you can think to yourself, like, gosh, my client, and it doesn't even need to be related to your product. Like, if you sell belts, maybe the information is weight loss. Because what happens when you lose weight? You need to tighten that belt. Yep. And that's maybe a stupid example, but you know what I mean?
No, like, no, it's not. Because our belt, you can trim as you go. So they come in an extra long length. You don't have to know the size. We have a lot of people that are on weight loss journeys where they're losing weight and they trim inches off their waist as they trim, you know, inches off their belt. So.
Yeah, dude, that would be so much fun too, to have like a social thing where people got to take pictures of how much they've trimmed.
Oh yeah,
you
know, absolutely.
And you got the hashtag like what's your trim or whatever. But that's the way I would move up in the funnel. I wouldn't trust people's numbers. What else? I think people have to know their numbers too. We've been so spoiled in business. Business got super sophisticated. Matt, this is your fault, by the way.
I know.
You did this. So, dude, you got it. I mean, 3 years ago, and this is a fact. Somebody argue with me on this. 3 years ago, 95% of small e-com businesses, small SaaS businesses, they had no idea. They were like, all right, I'm kind of profitable, so saith my accountant. Now I'm talking to people that doing less than $1 million gross revenue, and they know like they are broken down and clinical, and they've got dashboards and numbers. And it got into this position to where everybody's a PhD and they're all really good at it. And I'm just like, there's nowhere to compete. It's like bodybuilding. If you go back like 60, 70 years and you look at the third place bodybuilder, I'm like, I could take that guy. You know, he's kind of chunky. He's got a pooch. He's whatever. Dude, now you go to the gym next door to me, and there's 60-year-old dudes that would freaking squash Arnold Schwarzenegger's head with their hands. Yeah. You know, like we've just gotten too good at fitness and nutrition, and we've gotten to this point to where everybody's good at it. Well, we did that too, and we did it in these industries to where you have educators like Matt that actually cracked the code. And it's like, hey, there's an actual formula here that if you follow, you're going to get really good at this. And so now everybody's ultra sophisticated. So you don't get to play this game half-assed. Right. I love the concept of a side hustle. I love that people are like, oh, you can roll up an e-com store on, you know, nights and weekends. And I'm like, oh, really? Can you? Like, there's a human there who's sitting there obsessing over every single little data point in their funnel. And you're going to do this when you're, you know, drunk with your buddies from your phone at the pub, like horse shit.
Right.
You have to go all the way, all the time on everything. And people are getting so good.
That's changed a lot. When do you think that started to change? Because, I mean, you know, I've been doing this since 2009, 2010, you know, in the direct-to-consumer e-commerce space. And, I mean, it's changed so much. And to hear you finally start to say that, because one thing, my dad, he's not in it every day. So he doesn't see how fast this is moving, how much, you know, ad spend has changed, how much, you know, the return that we get. I mean, we've been into influencer marketing since really before it was sexy, since, you know, before that term was even coined. We did radio endorsement, you know, kind of, which is influencer marketing on, you know, on that level. It was a, you know, it was them advertising it, you know, hey, it was for the Armstrong and Getty show. And, you know, and they were the ones selling it, and they were the influencers. It did really well for us. That was 2014 or so. And then around 16 or so, started working with YouTube influencers and men's style guys. And so, you know, in that space, you know, those guys and were perfect for our market, but he doesn't quite understand how much it's changed, that we can't put everything, you know, that we have to spend money on ads. We didn't used to have to do that. It was just the influencers. They'd bring him into the site and it would convert. Nowadays there's so much more to it and it changes so fast. When do you think that started to really shift? Was it, you know, like post COVID or, you know, prior to 2020 and then, you know, to fast forward today, or was that 18, 19? When did that start to shift, do you think?
I don't think COVID did it. I think COVID accelerated it. I think it was really, it's a byproduct of the rise of the info marketer. So, you know, you could go all the way back. I mean, you go all the way back, right? And do like Napoleon Hill, but then there'd be like the Dan Kennedys, but then there'd be like the Frank Kearns and the Perry Belchers and, you know, the Ryan Dices. I think what ended up happening, and if you really think about, again, just any organic ecosystem, this is what would happen. We had a decade long period of people carpet bombing the ecosystem with how to content. Hey, here is how you do whatever you do. Yeah. And the content got better and better and better and better and better. Mm-hmm. And people actually consumed and used the content. Mm-hmm. And so then flash forward, they all grew up. Well, what happened when they grew up? They were sophisticated marketers. And so the info marketers weaponized their students. And we're seeing that weaponization to degrees, and now the weaponization has been amplified with AI.
Yeah.
Because you take those same people and then you give them these tools. now a solopreneur can do what it would take. It would have taken a team of, and I'm not being hyperbolic, it would have taken a team of 50 10 years ago to do what one entrepreneur can do today.
Yeah.
If that entrepreneur is smart and industrious.
Yeah.
And
Kasim, we just created a GPT that will literally audit your site, which is what we used to charge $1,500 for, and we're giving it away for free.
Doesn't it infuriate you? I talk to ChatGPT every day. It's my best friend.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So I think that the info marketer created this. But you know what's really interesting too is the info is dead. I'm business partners with Perry Belcher. He's in the real founder of the mastermind. I'm just the charity case because affirmative action. but Perry talks all the time about like, dude, if you go to YouTube, you know what the average time on site at YouTube is? Average time on site? Do you have a guess?
I'm going 30 minutes.
Average time on site across the internet is sub 60 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Average on for all websites. Yeah, average time on YouTube, 20 minutes.
Wow.
It's insane. And go to YouTube and try to learn anything. It's all there for free.
Yeah.
So all these info marketers. And then here's what Perry says, too, that makes so much sense. He goes, all right, let's say that you do make a course, sell a course, and you can do that profitably, and you have the audience to do it. You don't have to pay for the traffic. A hyper-successful course goes to 1,000 people. Hyper-successful course goes to 1,000 people. Or you put that course on YouTube and you can reach 100,000 people with ease. What do you want? Do you want 1,000 people to have bought your course and now you're done? And now it's a transaction and they owe you nothing? Or do you want to be Alex freaking Hormozy and have 100,000 people who's like, oh, that course was amazing. That dude's the bomb.
Yeah.
So info's dead is another prognostication. And it's not dead because it's going to go away. It's dead because all you need is one person in every industry to say, I'm not going to charge for this. You can have it for free.
Yep.
And now that entire info industry is just burned to the ground. And then so on the other half of info, if you want to survive the info game, it needs to be info and. Info and software, info and service, info and community. And then if you have info and, now the info is kind of the hook that brings them in, but it's all the other things that keeps them going.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing.
So. Yep.
I got a question that you said a lot of the marketers you're talking about are like pulling off of digital and cutting in major ways. Where do you see them moving money temporarily? And then you see that as opening up a vacuum again back in the digital space when they have to kind of reset their pricing. I think you see that a little bit in some of the traditional TV marketing that used to be so expensive. Everybody left, put it in digital, and now we're maybe in that same cycle, right? So where do you see people putting money now that you think smart?
Customer retention. Dude, if you haven't sent your customer something in the last, if somebody gave you money, they at least a thank you note, Christmas card, Happy Hanukkah, Eid Mubarak, something like send them. And then, I mean, imagine this will happen every now and again. There's a company that I buy my knives from that I love. I wish I knew the name of the brand because they just changed it. They send me stuff all the time, ad hoc. Now I've probably spent a couple grand with them, so I'm sure that there's like some matrix that they have as far as like you've reached this threshold, you're going to get this thing. But they'll send me like a free knife sharpener, and I just, man, it just, I don't know what this. What is this? 90 cents landed. You know what I mean? But they go drop this on me, and I'm giddy because I love knives, and now I'm going to go spend another $140 on one of their knives. Awesome. So, and it's so funny because when people talk about – this comes from Perry too. I'm just a Perry parrot now, I guess. I didn't realize that. but he talks about premiums all the time. Yeah. People are willing to pay, you know, $12, $13, $14, $15, $30 per click, but you won't send a previous customer a $2 thing? And you can go to Alibaba. Perry was giving people who signed up for a challenge free AirPods to watch the challenge on. And the AirPods weren't brand name AirPods. They were like, you know, Chinese, but they were nice. They cost them, you know, whatever they cost. I won't air out his dirty laundry, but you'd be shocked at how cheap they are. You can go figure it out yourself. You can just go straight to Alibaba and figure it out yourself. But his uptake, too, on the offer was like 500x. People were like, oh, God, I get that. Are you kidding me? Yeah, like, absolutely, I'll do that thing. So I think if, you know, the thing to do now is put money in loving on people and go back. Somebody bought from you 6 years ago and they never bought again. Why? Hey, man, I know you bought a belt 6 years ago. I bet you that belt is probably, this is what happens to the leather over the course of 6 years. Here's a cleaning kit on how to refresh that leather.
Yeah. Or we have a lifetime, remind them of our lifetime guarantee on the functionality and, you know, that kind of
that's
thing.
That's exactly
I was just thinking this morning, you know, that really in 2024 and what got me started thinking, I still answer the phone a lot. You know, I mean, we're doing crazy numbers and I'm still answering the phone, which is something that I could easily offload, but I enjoy speaking with our customers. I think that builds a relationship. And I was thinking, you know, I spoke with a customer today and she was just over the moon that she was speaking with the owner. And I get that every single time. And I you know, I tell them, I say, you know, it's not often as an online business that you get to communicate with your customer. So when you get a chance to speak with them and build that relationship, you know, I love that opportunity. And every single one of those customers that I've spoken with on the phone is now a lifetime customer. And they, you know, will rave about how they were able to speak with the owner and how I helped them with this or that. But in 2024, really wanted, you know, I want to make that a priority to focus on, because you spend so much money to get that customer. I mean, we could pay $45 to get a customer, and then we're just going to never, you know, do something. I mean, you know, and it's like, do something nice to them, send them something, but even just, you know, sending them an offer that, you know, hey, here's a, you know, a gift card to our store. If you ever want to add to your collection, something like that, to some of your best customers, I think would go a long way. Just like, you know, them sending you a sharpener. That's awesome. Yeah.
You just got to love on people, man. You know, it sounds, you know, childish and naive, but then you look at the best brands in the whole wide world, and that's what they do. Look at Amazon. Everybody talks about Jeff Bezos like he's a Bond villain. They're amazing. It saved the world during COVID. You know, they basically forced all vendors into free 30-day returns, two-day shipping. Like, they're the most customer-centric company I've ever seen in my entire life. They're unbelievable. If anything's wrong with anything at any point, you send it back, and then they go beat up on the vendor. They suck for vendors. They're going,
oh, man, yeah. I was about to say, they're the worst. But
yeah, and I know they steal people's products and all those things. So I forgot I'm talking e-com guys. I'm so sorry. Let's pretend
I'm an avid Amazon user, my friend. Gosh. I understand this ideally. Some of the bad, you just go to the chat, and the bot's like, your money's there tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, but that's don't the even thing. Send like, it back. They did this. They just give. Yeah. And in the short order, there's no way they're making money on that. But in the long term, it's like, man, look how committed we can be. And there's a lot of companies like that too. My Uncle Dave still tells the story about the Land's End shirt that he returned like 12 years later. You know what I mean? And like, he just, God, he's an old Air Force guy, man, and he's super frugal. And
yeah, L.L. Bean. And
yeah, dude, he gets just the biggest kick out of the fact that they took that shirt back. Land's End has made more money off my Uncle Dave on that one shirt they took back than any advertising they've ever done ever, because he just goes on and on about it. So yeah, just loving on people.
So I have two more questions for you, Qasim. One, how do you think the election cycles affect advertising?
Dude, you're talking to, I'm a rabid libertarian that hates libertarians, okay?
I'll
preface with that. Here's the problem. It is the policy of every, I'm trying to term this properly. What would you say? It's the policy of every incumbent to fudge the numbers during the election cycle. It's the reason that everybody's saying no recession. And so they spend in ways that they shouldn't be spending, and then they cut back in ways they shouldn't be cutting back. And you always see, and I can say this with integrity because I've been doing this a long, long time, you always see artificial bumps, and then you pay for it. It's like taking steroids or eating too much sugar. All of a sudden, there's just like this, oh my goodness, things are going, oh my, I'm going to die. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this spike and then this drop. And it's a ubiquitous truth. And I'm not the only one that talks about this. Like, go read any geopolitical strategist ever in the history of the world, regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on. They all do it because they need to get reelected. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to see an artificial spike. Or maybe we're seeing the lack of the drop that we should be seeing, right? That would be the balance of the spike. If you can't spike it, you can at least keep it from falling. And then after the fact, you know, if the incumbent sticks around, then he or she sits around apologizing for whatever's about to happen, the bloodbath. And if there's a new person in there, they're the ones that get blamed for the drop that takes place. And again, I think that that's more or less a fact. And businesses, small businesses, especially e-com, especially online, bear the brunt of it directly. Because that's where, I mean, if you're going to peel back your spending, that's how you peel that spending back. That's where all your discretionary spending is. It's no longer in the aisle waiting for the checkout. It's, you know, it's on, oh, that's a cool little thing I saw on Instagram. I'm going to buy it today. I'm not. So I think the election cycle is always going to impact us negatively. I think all business owners need to do is realize that it's happening.
Yeah.
Because if you can just adjust and realize that it's happening. The other thing about business too is, man, sometimes you just need to be the one that hangs on.
Yep.
You know, you don't need to be the best.
Like, if you just can weather the storm on the other side, all the people that were crappy business people are gone, and there's the people need to buy still.
Yeah. Well, you lose 30% of the customers, but you lose 80% of the competition. Yeah. And so then you're sitting there scooping up everything that's left over. I see that in the agency space all the time. Agencies right now are just hemorrhaging. It's a bloodbath.
Yeah.
But if an agency can hang on, they're going to clean up.
Yep. Second question. I told these guys ahead of time, I obviously think you're one of the smartest people I've ever met, and you've done really well. So who do you learn from?
I'm afraid to say because I'm going to get all sorts of hate mail. And I'll say in advance that not only do I not agree with if you have to agree with everything somebody says, you can't learn from them, right? Like if two people agree on everything, one of them is unnecessary. The person who I'm about to say, my wife despises with everything inside of her, because she's a single issue voter in a lot of ways. But I love Jordan Peterson to death, Generation Socrates. I love everything on YouTube. I think Perry Belcher, as far as people that I know, is the smartest person I've ever been in business with. If you're not listening to or paying attention to Perry, here's the problem with Perry. Most marketers, it's his fault. Most marketers will find a gem and they polish the daylights out of that thing and they put it in a shadow box and then they put, you know, they light it really well. And then they come and they spend an hour and a half presenting their gem and they take a Q&A on their gem. And you're like, man, that dude was smart. What a great gem. Thank you so much. Perry comes with this sack of unpolished gems and he's like, I've got these ideas. And he starts lobbing them at people and they don't realize the level of genius that man has. And he's always, I've never seen a human that can skate to where the puck is going faster or better. You know, I mean, you go to one of his AI bot summits and you'll see exactly what I'm saying. And it's not theory, it's stuff he's actually doing. So really love Perry. If you're looking for context, I really love YouTube. That's where I go to learn everything. There's 2,000 books in my house. It's floor to ceiling, wall to wall. So my favorite thing to do is to get obsessive over a topic. And then I will just buy literally all the books on that topic and anything that's sitting on my desk. I go to a coffee shop and then I just sit there and I pour through the books. And if I'm not on the books, then I'm on the podcast or the YouTube from that author or from somebody on that author. And I like going really, 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 really deep in short order. And I think that that's what an entrepreneur should do. I think that if you go really, really deep and stay there, you're a scientist and or a technician and God bless you, but you're not an entrepreneur. Like you now found your thing.
Next.
Yeah. But if you don't go deep, you're never going to really understand it enough to truly utilize it. So entrepreneurs need to get myopic enough to go deep for a while and then come back and be like, okay, this is what I learned and this is how we're going to use it. You didn't ask me how I learned. You asked me who I learned from.
Yeah, that's a great, that, no, no, I said that's, who that's, and how. That's, yeah, great. That's a great answer. Thank you very much. Yeah.
This has been awesome.
Having me go. Oh, man. Yeah. I'm sorry I interrupted you guys so much. I think if I was there, you know, you can kind of feel a room when you're with people, and I couldn't feel the room, so sure. Forgive me.
Oh, no, yeah. You're good.
I think everything you've said, I know I've learned, and this was great, great conversation to hear. To hear the passion behind how you say it, you know your stuff. It comes out so easily. And to hear your insights on a much larger scale, I think people can watch this and pull apart things that will help them, save them, make them make really good decisions for their brand and business, which is really, I think, the goal of this channel, is where people can have that information to where they don't have to fail so many times, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's going to fail, right? But like, if you could, you know, just that performance max conversation is beyond valuable for the general populace. Like, if there's one thing I feel like we could just scream louder than anything, it's that. Because if anybody's ever run any Google ads, that's all they do is push on you. Performance Max. Oh, your ads are doing terrible. You need to do Performance Max. And like, yep, like you said, your explanation of Google and how they operate and the data they have on all sides of it. And same thing with on Facebook and everyone else. They have all the data. They all want to show good numbers. And their goal is to make money off of you. And yep, that's such a refreshing point of view in this space about these things. It's just, I think, awesome.
All right. Thanks. So I lied. I have one more question after us talking.
I'm ready.
First off, I just want to tell you how grateful I am for our friendship. And I know that a lot of things that you do aren't just about money. So what's one thing that you would like us to know about you that has nothing to do with money?
I'm obsessed with Montessori schools. So
I went to a Montessori school. Yeah, my preschool kindergarten was Montessori.
Dude, I love that. Yeah. Maria Montessori was the first female Italian doctorate in the nation. Montessori pedagogy is the only system of pedagogy based on the scientific method. The way we're currently teaching our children now is a Prussian system that came when Rockefeller went, this is a fact. Rockefeller went to the Department of Education and said, I need factory workers. And so what they built was to create more factory workers. If you take the five most important brands in the world, you'd have Google, Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft, and Apple. Four out of five of those founders went to a Montessori school. The one who didn't sent his kids to a Montessori school, Steve Jobs. Here's where you're like, oh, wow, okay, so Montessori is pretty cool. But zoom in on the fact that Montessori makes up 0.00000002% of the available education in the United States. Yep. But it's producing 80% of our outstanding successes. If every child went to a Montessori school, we would live in a different world. Yeah. It's self-directed education. There's no, you don't sit in a desk in rows looking at a board. What child does that? Who? And then we're like, oh, the kid can't sit still. He's broken. No, he's not. He's the only one here that's not broken. And you're going to go medicate. Like, it's unfreaking.
And then shame him because he can't do it.
Dude, I swear to God, this is going to get real weird and real dark. If I could genocide the people that have created this system, I would hit that button. We are torturing children.
Yeah.
We're torturing children, and we're making them feel stupid and inadequate, and we're making success feel inaccessible. And if you look at the kids that are the most at risk, they're the ones that, like, it's the artists. It's the kids that, like, don't, you know, like, they're not normal. This got real weird, dude. I got real teary-eyed.
My son goes to a Montessori school. He's been there since day one. COVID happened. I was like, I'm not putting my kid in this penitentiary. And his school is actually an outside Montessori school.
I love that. The ones in the park, I've seen those.
At 2 years old, was reading books to his other classes. In second grade, the way theirs is all the schools and all the classes meet together on the same property. So when he was in third grade, he'd go to the second grade classes and read their books. His mathematics are through the roof. The things he thinks about, like, you know, we always incorporate them into business conversations and things like that. And the way they learn, like last night, he was
explaining his discount code process for how he's going to get five customers, the first five customers of every day.
Yeah,
so that he has business every day. It's awesome.
You know, 8 years old. We're like the contrary family. Like, he has a YouTube channel called Lincoln's Lens, and we started this very early. And he looks at this thing like his business. Like, it's crazy to see that he does. Like, he's like, Dad, I need merch. I need this. And like, I'm not joking. He's eight now, but he was doing this when he was six. And like, so the whole thing is like, this is how I can get more viewers and this and that. And that type of stuff never happens in public school. And so like that true way of learning, you know, they count rocks and do things that are just like real world. And then they burn that energy off like four times a day and then come back in and learn. So huge proponent for that as well. Like, I think you are right. I think the way kids learn, I think we learn, I think the way universities teach and all this is changing so fast because of how we consume information, that those generations will change the world. You know, early age, again, our son had an iPhone, access to things, right? And so the amount of learning that he does every day on YouTube, it blows my mind. He'll say all these things. Dad, did you know that? I'm like, what? No clue, you know? But we didn't have that growing up. I hated school, but I love learning. Like, if there's something I want, I go so deep in it, and I can't stop. And then I'm out, right? And then I do something else. And if I'd have had those methods in school, there's no telling what I would have turned into. I mean, I would have loved school, but I'm with you, man. School and education in that world, it needs to change. It needs to change for what is the future.
Yeah, when I think it's set up to be what it is on purpose. And maybe that's cruel to say, but I think that it's a method of control, and it's pernicious, and it's there by intention. Mm-hmm. So
I've never thought about that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Awesome.
Cool. Well,
thanks, Kasim. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate you guys having me on. Amazing, man. Yeah.
Love to enjoy North Carolina. Talk shop again sometime for sure.
We'll have you over to Raleigh.
Yeah. Come on over. If I ever come to Scottsdale to see my uncle, I'll definitely hit you up.
Yeah, would love that. Appreciate you, fellas.
Awesome. All right.
All right. Thank you.
All right, guys.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.